The content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour. Now, here's your host, Dave Krieger.
Have a pleasant, good Wednesday morning, hump day edition here on the Power Hour. It is 8 a.m. Central Time for those of you who are wanting to chime in. The Power Mall is now open, 877-817-9829. For those of you that want to order and keep us on the air, which is always important, that's what we do here. We got to bring you all sorts of different types of discussions. Double think. God, I like that word. From 1984. George Orwell, that was one of my high school reads out there. I've got Jack Cashel on the phone. Well, actually, he's streaming with me right now. For those of you watching us and streaming, we'll actually be carrying this interview on Brighteon, BitChute, and Rumble. Because we do that and we carry it for those of you who want to watch us on thepowerhour.com streaming, as well as those of you listening to the radio and over the internet and on shortwave at 7.490. Just so you know, Jack, we got a lot of reach out there. Jack got disinvited from a library presentation. I'm going to let him. He knows the story better than anybody because he was the target. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and Dave, and I appreciate it. Yeah, and that was the word. We choose to disinvite you because they had, it's not like I set this up and then they thought better of it. They invited me, right? The librarian in question, it's a small town in New York State, 10,000.
Yeah, Chautauqua people. County, of all places.
Chautauqua County, that's right. Yeah. A year ago there, Salman Rushdie was nearly assassinated, and that's been pushed out of the news altogether. The guy rots away in the county jail of Mayville, which might as well be Mayberry. It's about the same size. But this town is called Fredonia. It's a town of 10,000 people in Chautauqua County, which gave Trump a 20-point margin of victory, to put the audience in perspective. And one of the librarians had on her shelf a book, my first novel, actually. And it was set in Chautauqua County. And my wife says to her, "Oh, that's nice, you have the book." And she comes back to me and says, "Hey, you ought to send this librarian an email thanking her for putting the book on your shelf." See, wives do that to you. They teach you how to be polite, and then it gets you in all kinds of trouble, which I enjoy, actually. But
yeah.
So I email her, and I thank her. I said, "But if there's anything else I can do to help, sure, let me know." And then she says, "Hey, how about giving a talk on your new book?" And my new book is called Untenable, The True Story of White Ethnic Flight from America's Cities. And I said, "Sure, happy to do it." I've given talks all the time. I was on C-SPAN on just this past Sunday. I did four presentations. They showed it four times. No issue. In fact, I got nice emails from black people saying, "Hey, you really hit the nail on the head." So not thinking anything of it, the notice goes out that I'll be speaking there. And then a few days go by. And then I get this classically Orwellian email from the library director, Mr. Graham Tedesco Blair, if anyone wants to contact him. And he starts off, and this is a small town, 10,000 people, so everyone's nice. The library is so nice. I go there all the time. And it starts off saying, "You know, we hope you're doing well." You know, I said, "Okay." And it's a long email. So, and
here
then
he comes.
Gets the nut of it. He goes, "As much as we value a diversity of opinion here, we find that your talk will be unsuitable for our diverse audiences." And I'm thinking, diverse audiences? The town's less than 2% black. The county's a major Trump county, right? My audience is that's diverse in a sense, because they're generally excluded from, you know, common discourse. And that's where it began. Now, the local Tea Party, the Chautauqua County Tea Party, upon hearing about my disinvitation, immediately invited me, right, to come speak to the Tea Party. And they said, and they closed. And the woman who sent it said, Riley, she says, "And we will not disinvite you." And then it gets kind of more interesting because, like I said, it's a small town, so people know people. And, you know, the library board is regular citizens, one of whom my wife knew, the president of the board, but my wife uses her own name, so he didn't know. He was disinviting her husband. And my wife had done a lot of favors for him. She donates to the library board, to the library. And then he explains what happened. And exactly what I anticipated. He said, well, you know, the notice went out, and then we started getting correspondence from various people saying that this was really unsuitable, you know, for Chautauqua County. And then he closes with this. Oddly, all the responses were from women, right? No, they're not women. They're Karens. It's not oddly. It's inevitably. Unfortunately, the Karens of America are leading a sort of, uncoordinated drive to suppress free expression, free speech. And I do this. I don't mean to indict all women here, because the women who rose to my defense and started sending emails to Mr. Graham Tedesco Blair of the Fredonia Library were ferocious, right? They wrote the kind of letters that I would never dare to write, because they'd end up in fistfights. You know, they're like, "You're a little man," said one woman. So it's ongoing. I think they're going to buckle, but I'm not sure they will. There are countervailing forces now, but at least they've learned that like a book in question, just because it has the word white in the title, does not make it a racist book. And in fact, the book is the opposite of racism in many ways, but that's where it stands. So we'll see how it works out, Dave.
But the thing is, Jack, you wrote it for a reason.
Yeah.
You have a PhD. For those of you who do not understand who we're talking to on the phone here, understand that Jack Cashel is an independent writer, a documentary producer, a media consultant, and he has a PhD from Purdue in American Studies. He's taught media and literature at Purdue and Kansas City area universities, served as a Fulbright lecturer in France. So you're talking to somebody that has seen this stuff, has studied this stuff, that understands this stuff, and then wrote this 500 some odd page book about this stuff, which I have talked about on this show, which I'm glad we managed to hook up with you to get you on the show, because there was a reason why you wrote it. And that's right. Because there was evidence in your face that this was going on.
And you're right, Dave. And I realized this is my 17th book, by the way. I've done 13 book TVs. I don't think anyone's done more book TVs than I have. And they can go back and watch them if they want, just to see what kind of character I am. But I had a ringside seat on the implosion of America's poster child dysfunctional city, and that's Newark, New Jersey. I grew up there. And as an adolescent in the 60s, I watched the city collapse around me. At that time, we knew what the problem was. And just to cut to the chase, I asked a friend of mine, and he's a Democrat, so he's arguing against interest. And I asked him, I said, Artie, you were the last guy out on our block. You were the last one to leave. You and your widowed mother were the sole holdouts. I said, why did you leave? And he's searching for the word, and he said, well, Jack, it became untenable. And I said, well, what do you mean by untenable? He goes, well, when your mother gets mugged for the second time, he goes, that's untenable. When your home gets invaded for the second time, that's untenable. Well, you take Artie's story, you multiply it by a million or more, and you have this story of white ethnic flight from America's cities. My book is a memoir, and it's very kind of literary. It's my best book. It's the one I put the most heart into. But I also substantiate my observations with, you know, facts and details and statistics and numbers. So these people aren't being paranoid. The murder rate in Newark, our hometown, jumped sixfold in a 20-year period. Not 6%, sixfold. And murder is one indicator that can't be scrubbed away, that can't be explained away. It's a reality that you can't blame guns, you can't blame this, that, the other thing. And that's just one indicator. But even nationwide, you know, between 1960 and 1980, the violent crime rate It increased 370%. That was a real phenomenon. And the people who were caught in the middle of it, black and white, had no real option but to get out if they wanted to protect their families, their property, and their children especially.
Well, see, and the thing is you also wrote about the divisiveness that was going on within all of this framework that forced people out. And you get people like Michelle Obama, who you brought up in the book.
Right.
And she's basically, y'all are running from us. What are you afraid? I mean, come on. You want to, they're pointing that, I mean, if that isn't racism, I don't know what else is, but she's basically blaming white people who are insensitive to the needs of black people. They don't like black people, which is why they're leaving, because they're all a bunch of Archie Bunkers. I mean, that's my take when I read it. And I'm like, Michelle, you got this all wrong. And not every black person is a criminal. We just had a judge, as a matter of fact, that was told, I'm sorry, the Sixth Circuit just said, you are not going to sit in this trial because you just looked at this black defendant and said, you look like a criminal. You can't do stuff like that and just, you know, basically collect everyone into one basket and call them all criminals. It just doesn't work like that.
And that's, you're right. That's exactly what Michelle did. She did it in a public forum just 3 years ago, and she did it, knowing that the audience was unaware of her own history. And her history is indicative. She had good parents. Her mother was a stay-at-home mom. Her father was these are the Robinsons, Marion and Fraser. Fraser worked, technically for the city water department, but his real job was as precinct captain in the Daily Machine. And so they lived comfortably. They lived in a very nice co-op, a largely black co-op. It was, brand new almost. And within 20 years, the neighborhood had collapsed around it. Michelle's mom, Marion, did not want to send her and her brother, Craig, to the neighborhood public school, a block away, brand new, right? But the project kids went to that school. So what Marion did is she loaded up Craig and Michelle and drove them 15 minutes south to a neighborhood that had been largely Jewish and had good schools. This was a Class C misdemeanor. She would have had to repay the school district if she had been caught. And then they moved to that neighborhood. And then when it came time for high school, the neighborhood had transitioned already. The high school on two blocks away was all black, or virtually so. So Marion takes this job as a second job, a job, I'm sure she takes a job, has to work downtown to afford the tuition to send Craig to a Catholic high school. Out of the neighborhood, you know, virtually all white, and they're not Catholic. So it tells you how far they'll go to protect their kids. I bully for them. That's what they should do. Michelle, they sent to a magnet school downtown, up an hour away. And now Michelle has the nerve to accuse other people, white people, of white flight. And she says because of the texture of our hair and the color of our skin, they ran from respectable families like ours. No, they did not. They ran after they got mugged a couple times, after their homes got burned down, after their homes were invaded, after their kids, you know, were molested, after their kids were forced to bus, you know, an hour across town to some dubious school. They left for good reasons. And race maybe played some part of it, but only played a part of it when it became tangibly obvious that the crime and the dysfunction in schools were associated, not completely, but to some degree with race.
So, I mean, is that the bottom line in all of this? And that's what prompted it? I mean, because the way I had looked at this thing when I was in sociology in college was, you know, pretty much what you were looking at. And it's like, look, you live in a neighborhood, and most everybody in the neighborhood was peace loving and they didn't have problems. And back in the 50s and 60s, when I was growing up as well, we didn't have issues like that. We looked at everybody equally. We didn't have, you know, a dispute with the Constitution of the United States of America. Hell, half of us didn't even know what it was.
No, exactly. You know? And yeah, because in my neighborhood, and my neighborhood is called Roseville. It's a slice of Newark, New Jersey. We moved to that block. My family moved there in 1953. It was an integrated block when we moved there. It was an integrated block. When my father bought a home there, you know, it was a 1880s fixer-upper he bought on the GI Bill. And this wasn't fleeing out to the suburbs, buying a house right in the middle of Newark. I looked at the 50 census, which is the most recent one to be published. They wait 72 years, for whatever reason. And on my block, there were immigrants from 14 different countries. But the critical variable was this, black or white. There are 85 households on the block, Dave. Of those 85 households, you know how many had a male married head of household?
A lot.
83.
Yeah.
83 out of the 85.
You hit that. If that's a statistic, Jack, that is still rearing its ugly head. And Larry Elder even brought that up. In black households, virtually three-fourths of them do not have fathers as father figures in the homes. Three-fourths of them now. And especially in major cities.
That is the ultimate critical variable. In 2008, Barack Obama showed some promise. First of all, he was a good father. He set a good model. And so he's speaking in June of that year at Father's Day in Chicago, Jesse Jackson's home turf, at a church. See, Democrats are allowed to speak in churches because there's no separation problem for Democrats. But he makes a good speech. He says, hey, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, we have to admit that the greatest problem in our community now is the absence of fathers in our home. The numbers on this have doubled since our childhood. So he's right. Now it was, you know, at that time, 50, 60%. And then he says, the men are acting like boys. They're abandoning their families. And then he runs through the statistical consequences of fatherlessness. Fatherless boys are 5 times more likely to drop out of school, 10 times more likely to commit crime, 20 times more likely to end up in prison. This is true. This is true for all across all races. 3 weeks later, Jesse Jackson's picked up at a hot mic in his Fox News studio saying something so indelicate about Barack Obama, I won't even repeat it. But it was a threat. And it involved a slicing motion with his hand. And he's a rural guy. He probably knew what he was talking about. Barack Obama never spoke meaningfully about this subject again. But they know what the problem is. But that, to acknowledge that problem is to acknowledge that systemic racism is not the problem. The problem is family dysfunction, which leads immediately to community collapse. And that's what we watched across all of America. Now we're re-seeing it again these last 3 years.
Why do the Democrats, and I don't want to just point fingers, but you look at blue states and what is going on there. A lot of them claim to be sanctuary states, and then when they get overloaded with immigrants,
right.
And the immigrants, a majority of them are escaping the very thing that they're now going to soon face in this country.
Right.
I say, I don't believe it. I mean, they relied to get them here so they could be used pawns in the bigger election scheme, but you know, what they don't understand is that we are going through our own implosion in these blue state cities because of the very things you talk about in this book.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, and as a result, it's remarkable how totally liberal and the woker the city, the more flight there is from it right now and the more self-destructive they are. I can't believe what they did to San Francisco. That was my favorite city. And now it's unvisible, uninhabitable, totally untenable. And the neighbors the stores are closing. They have to close grocery stores because of the pillaging and looting. And they're beginning to catch on. I mean, like the Oakland NAACP finally said, hey, enough's enough. It was such a rare and welcome, reversal of typical behavior that it made the news. But in the big cities are hemorrhaging population. It's Los Angeles, New York, Washington, Chicago, San Francisco, the big woke cities. Tampa's not losing people. Dallas isn't losing people. The people who are writing about this phenomenon, first of all, write about it almost not at all. And when they do not attribute race to the flight, even though most of the people, almost all, that are leaving are white. It's because the people who are leaving now are the people who write the op-eds and are the pundits and they're the woke, laptop class. And so they get to determine who's good and who's bad. And in the 60s and 70s, as I talk about in my book, Untenable, It was ethnic working class whites who were leaving, who were forced to leave. And so if you're sitting in your ivory tower someplace, you can afford to just dismiss it all as racism, which is essentially what they've done for the last 60 years.
But this is the divisiveness, and it's happened ever since they got a foothold from Clinton to Obama to Biden. And this thing has been ongoing to further divide America, and they're throwing terms. I mean, you've got like this Kendi guy that I really don't pay a whole lot of attention to. And this guy was not what he said he was. This kid was of means.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he grew up very comfortably. Two parent family, nice family, both of them very well employed in the whole D.C. kind of Metroplex grifting consulting world. And and now he's the angry black guy, right? Now he's Ibrahim Kendi. That's not his birth name. It's a racket. They pay them tons of money. Robin DiAngelo, and she's white. And she, in her book, White Fragility, is like a textbook. It's a nonsense book. And I go through their descriptions of white flight in my book. And they've never talked to a person who was involved. The one case, Dave, that was most fascinating was this professor who's not as terrible as these people in terms of being accusatory. But her name is Leah Boustan. She's a professor at Princeton. She writes an award-winning book on white flight, which makes me wonder who came out second that year. Because it's kind of a joke. She writes an op-ed in the New York Times. And she's pondering whether it's just racism or is it a combination of racism and economics that caused white people to flee in cities in the 60s and 70s. And she concludes by saying, what makes my job more difficult is few of these people left accounts. And she goes, I'm not sure they even know why they left. That's very close to the exact quote. And when I read that, I just laughed out loud. I just interviewed 50 people. They knew precisely why they left. They knew when they left. You know, some of the stories are hair-raising, dramatic. So then I turned to the comments section of the New York Times, not expecting anything. And person after person just hammered her, telling their stories of why they left from all across the country. New Haven, Detroit, Philadelphia, Chicago. And the stories are over and over the same thing. You know, and or with variations. Sister's hair set on fire, right? You know, grandmother mugged, neighbor shot and killed, one after another after another. And as one guy said, and he spoke for a whole lot of other people, he said, how could you possibly write an op-ed on white flight and not mention the words schools or crime? And she did. She managed to do it by overlooking the obvious.
Which was?
Schools and crime.
Yeah. And exactly. I just wanted you to bring that up.
And and that's why I put the word ethnic in the title, too, because each ethnic group responded differently to the pressure that was brought to bear by, you know, neighborhood deterioration. So I grew up in an entirely, you know, overwhelmingly Catholic neighborhood. And a center of our lives was the Catholic Church and Catholic school.
Yeah.
So there was no need for us to run because of schools. The school on my block was half black by the time we moved there. I mean, so that wasn't a factor. And, you know, circa 1960, my neighborhood was idyllic. That's what the word people used to describe it, circa 1960. But what broke it down was, first of all, they put a highway right through the middle of it. Didn't help. Took my house. And that accelerated the flight. But the Catholic neighborhoods, the Irish and Italian neighborhoods, held out longer. The Jewish neighborhoods, by contrast, although Jews were the most welcoming of blacks moving into their neighborhood, they set up committees and have, you know, like potlucks and stuff. They were the first to leave because they depended on their public education. And not only on public education, but on excellent public education. They had very high standards for their children. And once those standards started breaking down, I mean, you only need one or two disorderly kids in a class to destroy a classroom. They were gone. Their flight was really immediate and fast. But the Italians hung on the longest. because they're ethnically coherent. They were tough, you know, and you know, frankly, they didn't value education as highly as Jews did. So they didn't mind going to a public school where, you know, their kids get roughed up, where they'd rough it up every day. You know, that was part of developing your little character, you know, when you go to school. They'd send their daughters to Catholic schools. Sons went to public schools. And yet they were blamed for resisting. The Jews were blamed for fleeing. I mean, so you were damned if you're doing, damned if you didn't.
But the amazing thing about it all is the transition and everything that we have seen now since this transgenderism, critical race theory, and all this other stuff continues to destroy the family unit. Now, Washington State has passed legislation that they literally can take your child away and you'll never see them again if you protest the fact that they're being treated as a transgender and they're going through, oh, what, you're objecting? And the state has the right to take your child. I mean, this, the insanity never ends, which is why I'm glad that you eloquently pointed out so many places in your book where this whole thing has basically taken on an evolutionary state.
Well, that's right, because progressives, by definition, progress. See, liberals could have a fixed set of values. Progressives cannot. They progress. So once they've conquered one hill, it's on to the next. And I mean, Dave, who would have thought 10 years ago that transgenderism would be the like defining issue of our time? I laughed. I remember thinking, this is nonsense. It's crazy, right? But apparently not. And they do, and everything they do becomes progressively more absurd to the, you know, and if not exactly, and not only absurd, but destructive. And they make public schools all the more untenable because they, even if you live in a nice suburb now, you cannot trust sending your kids to a public school.
Well, see, and a lot of moms that we have listening to the show are actually pulling their kids out and homeschooling them,
right,
rather than sending them into that mixmaster of mess.
Honestly. I mean, and COVID, of course, was the great boom for homeschooling. Those kids didn't skip a beat.
Yeah.
Whereas their public school kids were sacrificed on the gods of Pfizer. I don't know. You know, one statistic that I use because it's so revealing, a survey of 35,000 Americans done a year into COVID in the spring of 2021, Gallup, legitimate survey. And they asked a question, if you get COVID, what are the odds, chances you're going to get, end up in a hospital? 0 to 5%, 5 to 20%, 20 to 50%, 50% or above. The right answer is 0 to 5%. 41% of Democrats said 50% or above.
Oh, my.
Which is an indicator of how grossly misinformed they are. Not only about that, but any other issue. 28% said 20 to 50, so you had 69% utterly, totally misinformed, and they don't know it still.
Yep, I know it, and the misinformation continues. Jack Cashel, thank you so much. The book is Untenable, The True Story of White Ethnic Flight from America's Cities. You need to read it and refresh your memory as to why this whole thing is evolutionary. Thank you so much for being on the show. We will be back with Gregory Whitestone after these words. Stay with us.
Formula to nourish and heal eye tissue formulated by a board-certified MD ophthalmologist, Dr. Robert Abel. Why you need vitamins for your eyesight? There is a direct and proven physiological connection between the nutrients we put into our body and the quality of our eyesight. Some vitamins for eyesight can be absorbed from the food we eat, but other vital nutrients cannot, especially if you're not eating a daily, nutritionally balanced diet. Additional supplements are essential for optimal eye health as well as your overall physical health. With 23 vitamins and nutrients such as N-acetylcysteine, which is important for removing toxic substances from the liver, this, the most complete clinical strength eye and total body multivitamin available in one supplement. Call the Power Mall at 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
Hi, it's Joy Schmiley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs, and my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Just recently, we both started on the lithium balance. I want to keep my memory. My two in-laws are dealing with, you know, the Alzheimer's. They're in their 90s, and I see it. I don't want to be like that, and I've heard you talk about lithium to, you know, improve our memory and keep us up there.
Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Two minutes after the hour of 8 a.m. Central Time, Dave Krieger with you back in the Power Hour. Boy, just all sorts of interesting stories to tell this past half hour with Jack Cashel. Boy, that was awesome, talking about why white people are moving out of cities. This is crazy. It's total crazy what's happening to this country and how it's imploding, especially in the blue state cities. John Clauser, we just reported on the show. He's the winner of Nobel Prize in Physics in 2022, and he has declared this whole nonsense about climate change as pseudoscience designed to harm the well-being of billions of people. And, of course, we have a moron in the White House with a mental acuity of office furniture, and he's out there talking about, I just about declared a climate emergency. And Gregory Wrightstone, back on the show with us here now, all of a sudden, topic of conversation is the left is panicking after he's practically declared a climate emergency, and this guy doesn't know when to shut up.
Oh, that's right. You know, he may still do it. A national emergency could be declared, and that, man, that just frees him up to do all kinds of mischief, and just not just mischief. That's too light of a term. It's going to be terminal for us if he goes through with some. I mean, think about what all he could free up to do. He could impose a national top speed limit of 55 like they did back in 1979. And back then, states pushed back on it. And how did they enforce it? They withheld federal highway funds. And they can impose that every building, an apartment building, have to have their temperature set no lower than 78. That's something else he could do it'd be hard to impose that on private homes unless you have a smart meter. But otherwise, this is what the national government and the EPA has established as the temperature your home should be, 78 degrees. No, thank you. And then cold in the wintertime. But they want to control every aspect of our lives to solve a non-existent problem. Let me be clear. There is no climate crisis. That's what Dr. Clauser also said at Quantum Korea when he was in Korea at his keynote address. I've worked with Dr. Clauser now for over a month, and he's quite outspoken. He's called the IPCC a fountain of misinformation. And again, he called it pseudoscience, and he's right. Dave, you don't know this, or maybe you have read about it. After he got the award in Stockholm, he pocketed the check, accepted the medal, and then he lectured the Nobel Committee that they awarded the previous year in 2021. The people they gave it to were wildly wrong. They were climate models. They weren't physicists. They were meteorologists, and their models were wrong. And then he was honored. Get this. You'll love this. He went to the White House, and where Joe Biden honored him as receiving the Nobel Prize, and which is what you do, I guess, if you win a Nobel Prize. Afterward, he shook Joe's hand, and he told Joe Biden, he said, "You know, the science you're relying on for both energy and climate is wrong." Joe Biden got angry, and he said, "You're just spouting right-wing science, right-wing science." So Joe Biden's lecturing the current 2022 Nobel laureate in physics on science. That's pretty rich.
Yeah, Rich, that's an understatement. The guy's an idiot. I'm not talking about Clauser either. I'm talking about Biden. The man is a useful tool for deep state and everybody else that seeks to control the rest of us. Now, folks, if you know anything about the history of the Power Hour, we have had Gregory Wrightstone on before on this program. And he's a geologist, and he's the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. And he wrote a book called Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. We've had him on the show when that book came out discussing it. And so understand, and I'm still trying to figure out where Biden, Weather Channel meteorologist Stephanie Abrams said, "Mr. President, you called climate change a code red for humanity." And then she calls him on this national emergency thing. "So you've already declared a national emergency?" He goes, "Well, in a practical, you have a bug on you." And I'm trying to, "You have a bug on you? What is it, a ladybug?" I mean, what was that all about?
I didn't actually see that clip, but it was, yeah, but I read about it. That's crazy. I'm this close. My fingers are really close together to having my second book done, Dave. Okay. The title is A Very Convenient Warming: How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. And that's the big story that's not being told. The big story that's being covered up and you're being lied to is the benefits that we're seeing we're accruing from modest warming and more increases in CO2. And it's just look around. The ecosystems, by every metric, are thriving and prospering. We're breaking crop growth records year after year after year in countries from very hot to very cold. It's because of the warming means longer growing seasons. So killing frosts end earlier in the spring, arrive later in the fall, and CO2 is turbocharging plant growth. It's a huge, huge story. And because of this, because of climate change and our additions of CO2 to the atmosphere, we're able to feed a growing population. Population crop production has grown more than twice as fast as the population of the earth, crop production. So we're outpacing, our crop production is outpacing population growth. We should celebrate that. And I do in this book.
But the thing that bothers me the most is we're getting so many reports about diseases being created, viruses being created, pandemics being started. the central bank digital currencies. They want to annihilate most of the world's population. This has been their ultimate goal all along.
It's an anti-human agenda. If we just look at agriculture, what are they proposing to do? Number one, they want to reduce carbon dioxide, which is hugely beneficial for agriculture. That will reduce production growth. They've just recently advanced this idea of geoengineering to block the sun intentionally. Well, what's that going to do? That's going to, I mean, what you learned back in middle school about photosynthesis, what do you need for photosynthesis? You need water, sunlight, and CO2. And the more CO2, the better. So they want to block the sun, reduce CO2. And now their proposals to get rid of nitrogen fertilizer, which is, you may not realize it, in the early 1950s, a new process was developed where they use natural gas mainly. Over in Russia, they're using coal to create this nitrogen fertilizer. It's the Haber-Bosch process. And because of that, the introduction of nitrogen fertilizer, we think that maybe as much as 30% of the increase of agricultural products is because of nitrogen. It would be horrific if we did away with nitrogen fertilizer. They did it in Sri Lanka, and their entire agricultural system collapsed in just several months because they stopped using nitrogen fertilizer. So all these things, that, like I say, I call it an anti-human agenda that they've adopted. And you're right. We do hear people saying it out loud once in a while. They're just Jane Goodall last week. She thought the population be reduced by 95%. 95% of everybody. I say you go first, Jane.
You know? Yeah. You know, no, not me. I need to be around because I'm worth saving. You know, I mean, that's what these libtards will tell you. I mean, their agenda is all wrong. And if the world's population would just concentrate on feeding the masses, we'd be all right. But the thing is that, you know, what they're doing is basically disintegrating the family unit. And they're using all sorts of excuses, and this is just another one of them.
That is, it's sad, and we see it. This Lahaina, the Maui fires, are a great example where they're just lying to people, and they're relating these fires to climate change. It has nothing to do with climate change at all. High CO2, low CO2, high temperature, low temperature. Those fires would have occurred anyhow. People just don't understand. You know, the whole area around that town that was destroyed, it was horrific, but the whole area around it used to be an agricultural paradise with pineapple and sugarcane all around the town. All of the processing plants closed down a couple of decades ago, and it's reverted to grassland. So now there are these invasive grasses that have spread all over western Maui. And in the spring, the wet season, and this year was actually cool and wetter than normal, which is, again, opposite of what you're hearing. So it was cool. And that meant that the grass grew. There was more grass because of the wetter conditions. And then just as it does every year on Western Maui, there was a drought. There's a dry season from May to late July, which the only thing unusual would be if it didn't occur. And we also have these high winds that come down the mountains and are funneled through the valley right into the town of Lahaina. They have them a couple times every year that are pretty strong. And about every 8 to 10 years, they have these really fierce winds that come down. There was one of the worst was in 1858 that destroyed parts of the town in the fire. And the winds, you know, toppled trees and it just terrible. So it was falsely reported that the winds were from Hurricane Dora.
Yeah.
Number one, there are no hurricanes in the Pacific. They're typhoons. And number two, that Typhoon Dora was a couple hundred miles south of Hawaii. The winds had nothing to do with this. So this was just natural processes.
Yeah, well, see, and the other thing that we're looking at is why all of these older homes, why Mick Fleetwood's business, Fleetwood's on Front Street, why that whole area burned, yet the governor's mansion was still there intact. Processing plants were still intact. The beach hotel, the beach resort hotel, still intact. And we're going, what could cause isolated incidents like that? And the only thing we can come to the conclusion to here on this show is directed energy weapons. This thing was deliberate. deliberately set so investors could move in and take over like Oprah. Now, I mean, everybody's investigating because now they're all looking to swoop in. I mean, Biden wants to give everybody $700 each that suffered a loss. I mean, what a slap in the face is that? FEMA is slow to respond. I mean, we have another Katrina moment going on here. Joe in Arkansas, you're on the phone with Gregory Wrightstone. Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Whetstone, I've got two questions I'd like to ask you. One is, it's my understanding that really the only significant greenhouse effect gas is water vapor, that water vapor accounts for about 95% of greenhouse effect warming, and the other gases are pretty much insignificant. And number two question is that I understand a lot of farmers that grow in greenhouses pump extra CO2 into the greenhouse because it makes the plants grow so much better. And I've never heard it that it's a lot warmer inside those greenhouses than in greenhouses where they don't pump in extra CO2. So that's my second question. Is it a lot warmer in those greenhouses where the farmers pump in extra CO2?
Well, no, Ned. A greenhouse warming has nothing to do with the greenhouse effect. Is actually a false label because the greenhouse warming from the gas from water vapor, as you're right, it does make up some 90% of the greenhouse gas warming potential that we have. But the greenhouse effect is completely mislabeled. It's not, doesn't act like a greenhouse does. It's really the infrared that reflects off the surface of the ground is then re-emitted by the greenhouse gases. I don't want to get too technical for you here, but they're two different things, really. And again, people confuse greenhouse and greenhouse warming in a physical greenhouse with the greenhouse effect. But you're right. Water vapor by far is the largest greenhouse gas. The other three that were being demonized now are CO2, nitrous oxide, and that goes back to this nitrogen fertilizer, nitrous oxide and methane. And we've written papers here at the CO2 Coalition. We're the top scientific organization in the world talking that does the research on climate and energy. And so we've published papers on methane, on nitrous oxide. What's the real warming potential? And it's incredibly small. And again, they're doing something here. They're trying to impose all these on us to solve a non-existent problem.
Wow, amazing how that works. Brady in Vegas, Gregory Wrightstone is with us. We're talking about CO2 Coalition and about this pseudoscience that the people he's been hanging out with regarding climate change. What's your question?
Well, I guess I got a point on it. You got to go back to the Obama years, and up till then, CO2 was considered plant food. And when this guy got into office, he changed it to a pollutant, and all this started with, oh my God, CO2 is bad. We got to starve our plants. We got to stick the CO2 back in the ground. And everybody who went along with these supposed scientists, okay, very basically, CO2 is plant food. How did we ever get away with something that's going to sustain life on Earth, having it become a pollutant, and everyone around the world goes along with this nonsense science? I am okay. So sick of greenhouse gases, but one thing I want to bring up is geoengineering of the weather and how they're doing that with the harp frequencies, and also in what happened to Hawaii, that was a direct energy weapon, also known as a dew.
We just talked about that.
You can see some of the photos, and you got lasers coming down, folks.
Yeah, we've seen all those videos. They're out there right now. We posted them here on the Power Hour. We appreciate that, Brady. Thanks for your call. Your comments on that, Gregory?
Well, the CO2, our motto, our unofficial motto at the CO2 Coalition is, we love CO2 and so should you. And I've got a bumper sticker on the back of my SUV that it has I heart CO2. And that's our big... That's one of our goals is to promote the benefits of CO2. And again, my next book is A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. And we should celebrate that. You're right. There's not enough of that to get out there, but there's so much money being spread. The AP just received $2 million and funding to talk and spread climate fear. And they need, that's what they need to do. They need to demonize everything they can and weaponize this subject, because we, what we need, why else would we accept otherwise terribly harmful regulations that are coming down the pike? Why would we accept 4 and 5 times increase in your electricity prices and gasoline? Why would we do that? We would only accept it if there's, if truly there's an existential threat and CO2's leading to warming that's going to destroy us all. There's nothing of the kind. In fact, what I, in my, in the second book, a big section of the book is on the strong relationship between the rise and fall of temperature and the rise and fall of civilizations. And there's a strong correlation between each of the previous warm periods were hugely beneficial to mankind. Food was bountiful. It was much warmer than it is today. And food, again, food was bountiful. Great empires rose up. And it was in the cold periods that really just were horrific. Each cold period, as it started getting cold, we saw crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation. And all these great empires and civilizations collapsed. So, Dave, if you were an emperor in a warm period, you'd be pretty, you'd do, and I think you'd make a good emperor, by the way. But it would be, you'd be pretty safe because you could feed your subjects. If it started getting cold and the crops start failing, and all, now you can't feed your, the peasants and the serfs, well, they're going to come after you with the pitchforks. And that's that's what we find happening throughout history, is when the big civilizations collapse because of the cold and crop failure.
The thing is, Gregory, these people that are running the show up there in D.C. that are on the virtual, practically, I mean, why is the left panicking about this anyway? They should be, oh, yeah, everything that he wants to do. The progressives ought to be loving it. And I'm not seeing it. We're just, until it affects their paycheck directly, you're not going to see anything happen. Tom in Ohio, we got so many people that want to ask you a question. The phones are stacking up. It's crazy. And I got 4 minutes left. Tom in Ohio, go ahead. What's your question?
Good morning. I don't really have a question, but I need to, I go off on this like you go off on democracy. I keep hearing and reading all the time about the CO2 coming out of your exhaust pipe and the coal-fired power plants. I didn't know coal power plants and autos breathed. I thought it was carbon monoxide.
Yeah, you're
coming
right.
Out of your exhaust.
It is. These they people are very misinformed.
No, that's just not, That's just not true. It's carbon dioxide that comes out. When you burn fossil fuels, you generate, for example, methane, CH4. When you burn it, the product is heat, water vapor, and carbon dioxide. Carbon monoxide doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yep. Jeff in North Carolina, you're on. Go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, great. Great show as always, but thank you. Yes, sir. I have a quick question. You touched on it a little bit. The other caller did too. The big boys that are running the show, as Dave said, are they targeting certain areas of the United States with HARP weapons according to their agenda? Is that how this is working? And then I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not. That's out of my wheelhouse. I won't discuss HARP weapons.
This is a thing that this antenna array up in Alaska is being used to direct energy in all sorts of frequencies and vibrations and whatnot in the atmosphere. So I mean, it's a deep subject that I think we really need to get into a separate conversation about that, because we're talking about geology right now. Jim right. in Missouri, go ahead. I guess Jim is gone. Okay. In response to all of this, you know, we've got this Green New Deal. And I guess with the time I have remaining, I got 2 minutes here to try to get and filter through a lot of this stuff, because the concerns are basically pointing at we have a runaway government that's got its own cockamamie agenda. And my question on behalf of all my listeners is, what do we the people do to preserve our own livelihood, our own way of life, outside of the government? I mean, getting further away from how do we do that?
Well, become self-sufficient. I need to do more of that myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in Arlington, Virginia, but I have a patio that's full of vegetables that I'm growing. I've got a big supply of water that I more than I can need for a month and a half. Things like that. There are true risks to our electricity, our the electric grid, things like EMPs. Solar flares could just take us down. And once the electricity, if the electricity grid goes down in the cities for, what if it goes out for a few weeks? I mean, it would be mayhem. It'll be
EMP would take this whole thing infrastructure down for years. And this, it would be virtually, we would implode in the big cities first. Gregory Wrightstone, thank you so much as always. I mean, just a wealth of information. We appreciate your coming on the show. We'll have you back again, of course, because we're going to continue this. As time goes on, ladies and gentlemen, whatever you can do, like Greg said, self-sufficiency, that's number one. Stop this FirstNet garbage from taking over our elections next year. Figure out a way to get it done. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless what's left of the United States of America. See you tomorrow.
Harmful organisms are everywhere affecting your health and well-being. Fortunately, there's a solution. Paratrex is a unique formula designed to help create an environment that's hostile to invading organisms. Made with a blend of herbs and other natural ingredients such as wormwood, which has often been used in traditional medicine as a dewormer. If unwanted organisms are affecting your health, Paratrex can help bring it all back in balance. Order today from thepowermill.com or call 877-817-9829. Are you tired of trying to figure out how to get all your fruits and vegetables into your busy lifestyle? OptiVita Complete Essentials provides you with 22 whole food vitamins and minerals, 29 fruits and vegetables, probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for ultimate health and nutrition. 30 individual packs, now less than $3 per day. Get your OptiVita Complete Essentials by calling 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products. And he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.